Coast to Coast AM indeed, 2006. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, whatever it is, wherever you are. It certainly is a pretty spooky night. We'll get back to Susan in Florida right after this. The reason I was asking Susan whether he made it or not at the last moment before the break was because I had to know, since you were there while he was observing everybody working on him, did he, after he came back to the world, remember you?
Well, what happened was that, like I say, they were working on his body and they could hear the noises, and it was getting to a point, I think, where they were going to kind of revive him a little bit, because they were saying he's choking on his blood and they were doing some kind of suctioning or something, and he was still afraid, but then I told him, God can help you through this, you can trust him.
Right.
And when that young man's spirit, when he said, yes, I'll do that, all of a sudden it was like there was like light that came out of his spirit. It just sort of flooded over his spirit and in him, and he just had, like, he says, now I'm not afraid, now I know what you mean, and he says, I've got to go. And it was like almost like just like a vacuum cleaner or something just sucking him back toward his body, and he was sort of half in his body and half out of it, and he said, thank you, I'll be all right now, I'm not afraid. And then all of a sudden, as soon as he said that, it was like a vacuum cleaner or something sucking me back. And it was like I opened my eyes and I thought, oh, my gosh. And I looked around and here I was sitting in my living room. And I thought, oh, my gosh. And then I turned the TV back on to see what was going on. And about 20 to 30 minutes later, they announced on the TV that he died.
Oh, my God.
And I was sad to hear that he died, but I know that that's the weirdest sounding thing. I can't explain it, except that somehow prayer must have made a bridge, that somehow spirit to spirit could communicate. And even though I'm sad that he died, I really sincerely feel that he died safely.
Yeah, it sounds like you gave him the comfort before he passed. You gave him the comfort to pass. That is really quite a story. Prayer, of course, is intent. And so she put herself right in the middle of a life and death situation. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. West of the Rockies, Zach, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
I used to be at a security guard at a cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in between rounds one day, and I'm in the office, and, you know, it was like the end of my shift, you know, I'm getting ready to leave, packing up, and there's a window, a big window, that's like by the front of the office, and you could see outside in the parking lot.
Sure.
And I felt something like somebody was watching me or something like that, and I looked up, and I saw like a foggy light, like it looked like a person, kind of like the outline of a person by the window, like a foggy type of mist, kind of. And as soon as I saw it, it moved away from the window. And I ran outside to make sure like it wasn't like a car light, like somebody pulled into the parking lot, or like maybe somebody was in there by the window. And I looked around and nobody was around. And it just struck me as weird because, you know, I'm a little suspicious. I work in a cemetery. So, you know, it made me think something was going on.
Well, so beyond that, though, you don't know what it was.
No, but another time I was in the back office and I was trying to relax, like in between rounds, you know, from checking the cemetery to make sure it's all secure because I was a guard there. And I thought I heard voices in another room. And I went and I checked everywhere, the whole place, I checked in the front of the cemetery because I thought I heard something, like somebody talking, like casually, like just in another room, and I'm trying to find, you know, the voice. And there's nobody around. You know, uh-huh. It just sounded like people just casually talking, too. That's the creepy part, because it was kind of low.
Well, you had a creepy job anyway, Zach. Being a guard in a cemetery is kind of creepy, and it keeps taking me back. People keep mentioning these cemeteries. I don't want to think that a spirit is anywhere near its the body that it's left. That doesn't make any sense to me. With everything that we know about death, that part makes no sense to me whatsoever. Why would you hang anywhere near your body? But there are so many things that we truly don't know, aren't there? Wildcard line, you're on the air. Tim in Wisconsin.
Was that me, Art?
That's you.
Oh, fabulous. Long-time listener. Good to hear you, and good to hear that you're getting along very well over in your second life dimension, shall we say, experience.
Thank you.
I've got a story for you that happened to me when I was a teenager. Naturally, we were kids. My father gave me the book of Roswell when I was about 13 years old. So I've been interested in all the paranormal different stuff since then. And so when we were kids, three of us, your screener said to jump right into the story. So here I go. And we were interested in, you know, Aleister Crowley and reading all kinds of different manuals. And turned out that one of our friend's sister was involved in what evidently they call a coven, and had access to this manual supposedly written in blood and all of this stuff. And, of course, again, we were teenagers, so part of this may be... there was probably a little gleam put on it for us to get us interested in this stuff back when we were teenagers, if you understand what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So anyhow, we decided to go ahead and give this a try, to conjure up this being, which we had no idea what we were doing. This is kind of along the lines of the Ouija board. We had to actually go around and get some different items, some rice paper, a quill, a pen made out of a crow's feather, a lemon, a black candle, a piece of charcoal. And basically, I don't know if you want me to go into the details of how we
did it. Just tell me what happened.
Well, what happened was after we did what this, I'll use the term recipe, called for, we kind of went into a haze for about an hour and woke up and realized that about an hour's time had gone by. Mm-hmm. And what this was a supposed blood curse. And again, we were kids and we were playing around, you know, who is our current enemy of the week, you know, who are we arguing with at school or something that
yes.
week, you know, so we put the names of our current enemy on this rice paper, after which you had to cut yourself and use your own blood and use this quill to write the name of this person, mm-hmm. and recite this recital while you're chanting, or chant this recital while the candle's burning and whatnot.
And so what happened to these people?
Astroth?
Uh-huh. What happened to these people?
Well, what happened is, strangely enough, I'm friends with actually one of these people still. He's still alive.
Uh-huh.
But what happened was, we came to about an hour after we had started this ritual and
right.
realized, holy cow, and saw this kind of misty, kind of cool, weird feeling, and it seemed like something had happened. And what had happened in the long run, to get to what you're asking, is one of the guys, again, this was supposedly to create some sort of a blood curse on this victim that you...
Very short on time, Tim.
Okay. One guy got gout. Another guy, unfortunately, died in an auto accident through loss of blood. And the third guy moved away, and none of us, we live in a small town up here, well, it's not so small anymore, in Racine, Wisconsin. He moved away, and we've never heard from him again. But this was really about... this was the most interesting part of the story is that about another hour transpired after we were all done and, oh, well, you know, we did this, well, whoop-de-doo, we went down and started listening to music, and we got a telephone call by a guy who identified himself as Maynard. And as I recall through reading and whatnot, Maynard is kind of an old 16th century name, possibly for one of, like, Mephistopheles or Satan. Maynard was one of those names that was used evidently in...
Okay, Tim, we're out of time.
Okay, well, which was strange that this guy who had no knowledge of what we did called and told us to destroy what we just created, or we would open portals and doors that we would not understand. And
okay, well, it sounds as though it's a good thing that you ended that when you did. And that sounds also like that sounds as though you fooled around with somebody's instructions who had been playing with the craft. That story unwinded kind of slowly for us there, but can you imagine hurting that many people? The craft is real, and I would urge those of you who are tempted to play with it, tempted to do the kind of thing that he apparently did with his friends, not to do it. You really do open doors and bring in things that could affect the rest of your life, could affect other lives. It's not a game. Don't do it. Let's go to Wildcard Line 5 and Tim in Illinois.
Hey, how you doing, Art?
All right, sir.
I got a story about cemeteries for you. I mow marble gardens.
Another cemetery story.
Another cemetery.
What? You're breaking up on me there.
That.
Tim? Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
All right, I caught this figure out the corner of my eye one day, and I turned back real quick and looked at it, and it was like a short, fat Abraham Lincoln. He had the hat on his head and all that.
Uh-huh.
And I looked at him for a second. I kind of looked down again, and I looked up at him. He turned, he looked at me, and he smiled. And it was like he met with me in my head. He told me we were doing a good job, you know, and the place looked good. And he, like, turned, and he just started walking away. And he just faded. And then that was it. He was gone. I mean, it wasn't like a scary ghost story or not, but I really believe I seen a ghost that day.
Well, sounds like you might have. Not all ghosts are scary. And not all ghost stories are scary. Now, we try to get the scary ones for you on Halloween. But look, I believe in life after death. I'll just sort of lay that on the table for you. I believe in life after death. I believe that it's real. And so not all ghost stories are going to be scary. Not all deaths are scary. Many are, and I think that's where the majority of the so-called ghost stories, the scary ones, actually come from. If you listen very carefully, I think you'll find that whether it's people messing with the craft, or particularly like that young fellow who had been messing with the others, it could turn out very poorly, but it doesn't mean that all ghost stories are bad. Many are just attempts to communicate. Many are attempts to let the person on the other side know you're okay. But all of them, if you add it up like a great column of math, they all add up to the same thing. Bottom line, there is life after death. East of the Rockies, you're on the air, Mike from Iowa.
Art, it's good to hear yes. your voice.
Thank you.
On Ghost. I had an encounter with a couple of strangers back when I was a teenager and delivering the Des Moines Register. And at the time, there was a new addition to the town, probably about 5 years old or so, all this string of houses southeast of town. And I always delivered the paper at 3:30 in the morning before school, and it was always pitch black. And took my bicycle up to the southeast house of the town, and I never cut through people's lawns, so I went up their gravel driveway and turned right and paralleled the front of their house on their sidewalk, walked up the three steps and put the paper in their screen door, turned around and walked down the three steps, and then turned right to walk the sidewalk to the their driveway. And I looked up, and right where I walked over was this old man wearing a wide-brimmed hat, and a flannel shirt, and baggy pants and boots. And he had absolutely no color to him, and I could see right through him. And I just, well, people always say fight or flight. Well, I really disagree with that. I think there's a tertiary called frozen.
And that's what you were, frozen.
For about 10 seconds, I was just frozen. And
no, I think that's also a natural reaction. For example, if you're near a wild animal, a lot of times frozen is the best thing you can be. Running is the worst thing you can do. So frozen is perhaps okay, and is perhaps a natural reaction. It shows a non-threatening stance.
Well, it is a reaction of no action.
That's right.
It's not doing the fight or the flight.
Right, so you froze.
And the only, I thought of a plethora of things, but what predominantly went through my mind is I just walked over that spot. Mm-hmm. 15 seconds ago. So I decided I would talk to him. And I asked him his name. What he was doing is he was pumping water from an outside water pump.
Mm-hmm.
And he had the bucket on that nook on the spout. And he was filling the bucket with water, but it never overflowed. And I asked him, well, first thing I said was, well, I'm sorry I walked over where you are now. And I asked him his name, and I apologized. And after about 15, 20 minutes, I ran out of things to say. And my brother and I, my younger brother and I, back then, we late weekend nights, we would watch Creature Feature and then the scarier Acre Creature Feature, which was the siding company or roofing company, I forget which. And I learned that if you ran, the monster would catch you from behind. It always happens.
Yeah, that's the way it works, all right.
I never recall someone that didn't run, that got caught from behind by the monster.
Yeah, I think freezing and perhaps even getting into the conversation was the wiser of the moves you made. I think that kind of goes back to an animal instinct in some of us. When we're presented with something like that, we just freeze. Maybe that's not such a bad move. Ghost to Ghost AM 2006. You've got a story for us. Those are the numbers. An additional way to get in, perhaps, is to include your, a sentence about your story and your telephone number, including area code, and we'll get to you. So it can happen that way, or you can pick up one of the lines. All of this continues in a moment. Time is short, so very quickly to Clint in Calgary. You're on Ghost to Ghost AM. Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Just fine.
Fantastic. Okay, well, to start my story, before I before this happened to me, I actually didn't believe in ghosts. Like Edgar Allan Poe said, I don't believe in ghosts, but I've been scared of them my whole life. So that's kind of my attitude. I moved into this apartment with my friend Calvin when I was about 20 years old. And every night when I would lay in bed, I'd have my back to the room. I would feel like I would hear something, like maybe a breath, or I would hear like the clicking of an ankle, you know, or a knee when somebody's walking. Mm-hmm. And every time I heard that, as I was falling off to sleep, I'd kind of look over my shoulder and there's nothing there. So I'd kind of smile and go to sleep. And that would happen like every night when I was going to bed. And one night, I was laying on my back, and I had this weird feeling like somebody was looking at me. So I opened my eyes, and there was somebody leaning over my bed looking at me about 2 inches from my face. And when I opened my eyes, I made whoa, like a noise like that. And this what entity or whatever it was, it jumped back too, like it was scared. And it ran behind my little bookshelf in my bedroom. At the time, though, I wasn't really, it was kind of dark in my room, so I thought I had an intruder in my bedroom. So I went behind the bookshelf, you know, with my lamp in my hand ready to plug whoever it was. I turned my light on, and there was nobody back there. And there's no way to come out from behind the bookshelf. There's no windows or doors or anything like that. So I told my friend Calvin, you know, the next day what had happened, and he said, if you're having a problem with something in your room, maybe just write a note and saying, I don't know who you are or what you want, but if I can help you, please let me know how. But if I can't help you, please leave me alone. So I did that. I wrote the note out on the desk, and after that, I never had any troubles. I never had any clicking or breathing or breaths or anybody looking at me in my bed. So I just thought I could
help with it. Fascinating. I'll tell you what's interesting about that is that you, and this, I've had so many stories like this, that we apparently startle them many times as much as they startle us. Not always, but so many times in these stories, the entity or the spirit or whatever it is, when it realizes it can be seen, appears to be as startled as we are. And I'm trying to put together in my head what that means. First time caller line, Chris in Nebraska.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, I wanted to share with you guys a story that kind of spooked the bejesus out of me, but at the same time was kind of a relief. I used to be an over-the-road trucker. And I was cruising down I-40 in New Mexico and I got flagged over on the CB from another trucker that there had been a rollover accident. Mm-hmm. And all the passengers in the vehicle had been ejected. And took a long time to get any kind of state patrol or flight for life medics or anything out there. But there was a young girl that had gone into shock, and I wrapped her up in a blanket and was holding her. And about an hour and 15 minutes later, they finally got there and got the major triage taken care of. And
my God, that is a long time.
It was a rough go. But when they finally came up and to take the girl from me, they had told me that she'd expired. She'd passed on. And I never knew it. And so I was kind of a devastating thing for me. I avoided that I-40 interstate, ran many miles out of my way just to stay out of there for a long time. Got in a hurry one night coming out of California and decided I'd had to run I-40. And just as I passed the mile marker where that accident had happened, my little dog that had been running with me forever, never messed in the truck before, relieved himself in my passenger seat. And it went yipping and screaming into the back of the sleeper. And I looked into the back of the sleeper to see what was wrong with him. And he was down there cowered under my bunk. And as I looked back to the road, I noticed that there was a young girl sitting in the passenger seat of my truck.
That would be my last trip on I-40.
I scared the bejesus. I almost wrecked my truck. But she was, ghostly, I guess. You could kind of see through her. I could see my door on the other side through her. And she just looked at me and she smiled. And in a very, very soft voice, she said, thank you. And I'm okay. And she was gone.
Oh, and that's an awesome story.
I pulled over and walked around my truck for a long, long time before I got back in it. But, it's like I said, the most terrifying experience of my life and probably the most satisfying, you know, is just something inner inside that it's really settled. But
I hear you. Chris, thank you very, very much for the story. That is, actually, that's kind of a heartwarming story. Not all ghost stories are scary. Although I suppose, no matter what, they're scary at the time. But in reflection, obviously, he had done something that she very much appreciated, and she somehow made it back to say so. That was quite something. Wildcard Line, Sandra in Canada, you're on the air.
Yes. My boyfriend and I were asked by friends of ours who own a fly-in fishing lodge. Now, this is about 600, 700 miles north of Manitoba from Winnipeg, just outside the Manitoba border in Ontario. I won't name the lodge. There's a half a dozen, they're log cabin style with bunks, like for the lodging for the people that come to stay there. They fish. There's three people, just the fishing guide, an Aboriginal man, and myself, and my boyfriend. His job was to do maintenance, take care of the boat motors and, gas the boats and oil them and make sure they're running properly and maintenance around the place. My job was to take care of the cleaning of the cabins and the making of the beds and the cooking. And anyway, the Keebler people were there. So that was the group. They were from the States, and they had come to fish. So the guide's job is to take them to the best fishing spots, and they catch fish, and they get all drunk and everything and tell all their stories about all these big fish they caught. Meanwhile, he caught them all. But anyway, where we stayed, when all of the lodgings were filled, was the cabin. There was like a log cabin not too far from the lodgings, like maybe 3/4 of a mile. And this is right out in the bush. It's all just bush, wild, wild bush. And anyway, it was August. It was really, really hot. And inside the cabin where we stayed in, there's a big wooden door on the inside, but it was so hot. There's an outside door, which is just a swinging door with this big screen in it, and the hook was on the door. And outside, just above the door, is like a lamplight, just so that you can see to go to the outhouse, to go to the bathroom.
Sure.
Okay? So I woke up wanting to go to the toilet, to go to the outhouse, and I couldn't get up. Like, I tried to get up off the bed, and I couldn't get up off the bed. I felt myself being pushed back down into sitting position. And I thought, oh, I was just sleepy and still out of it. And I tried again, and the same thing happened. So I'm sitting there. I can move every other part of my body, my feet, my arms, my head, everything, but I cannot get up off the bed. And I looked ahead toward the screen door thinking, well, this is weird. I can't get up. I can't go to the outhouse. And as I'm looking toward the screen door, this man, an old man, not an elderly man, but an old man, walks right through the door, doesn't open the door, walks right through the door, not an apparition, a full body person. Turned on the kitchen light. There's an old kettle, you know, those old ones with the wire handle and a wooden handle with the wire,
yes.
You know, with the pointy spout.
Yes.
It's like aluminum, and a gas stove. So he goes over, there's a water pump. He dumped out the kettle. He pumped water into a container that sat beside with a spout so you could pour that into the kettle, into the top of the kettle. He took off the lid, poured the water into the kettle, turned on the gas, and he sat down at the kitchen chair, on the kitchen chair by the table, waiting for the water to boil. He got up, he opened the cupboard door, and he took out, there's only one teacup in there with a saucer. Everything else was mugs.
Okay, not a lot of time, Sandra.
He pulls it out, he puts it on the kitchen counter, He takes down the sugar bowl. He opens the drawer, takes out a spoon. He puts the sugar in the cup. He takes the tea bag from the box. He puts it in the cup, and he brings it, and he sits it on the table. Then he goes and he gets the kettle, and he puts the water in the cup, puts the kettle back on the stove, sits back down, and he takes the spoon, and he's squeezing the tea bag. I'm sitting watching everything he's doing. And I was really feeling scared because I could move every other part of my body, but I could not get up. I felt pressure to sit where I was sitting. And I just got up the gumption to say, who are you and what are you doing in our cabin? Because I thought it was one of these maybe Keebler people, but it wasn't anybody I had recognized.
So what did he say to
you? And he says to me, you just sit there and be quiet. I want to have my tea in peace.
I see.
So I am going, oh my God, what if this guy finishes his tea and starts to get a lumberjack t-shirt on, and you know those dark green pants that engineers wear?
Mm-hmm.
He had clothes on like that, and I thought, what if he finishes his tea and starts taking off his clothes thinking he's going to get into bed and go to sleep? So I start pounding my boyfriend with the side of my fist all up and down his back as hard as I can, right? Just pounding him. And he won't wake up. He just won't wake up. And
okay, Xander, we got to get to the end of this story. We're out of time here.
Well, anyway, so the man says to me, quit hitting him. Let him sleep. I just want to have my tea in peace. And I'm like, oh, my God. He finishes his tea. He gets up. He picks up the saucer. He walks to the counter. He puts the saucer on the counter. He walks to the screen door, and he turns around, and he looks at me, and he says, I'll leave the light on for you, and you can go and pee now. And he walks through the screen door, just like the way he came in. So I figured the native guide might know something about some kind of history of myths or anything from that area. And I went up to him and I said, you know, you're going to think I'm nuts. And he goes, no, actually, I know what you're going to tell me. You saw the old man. And I said, then you know about this. He said, did he have his cup of tea? I said, yeah. And I said, and the tea bags there, the saucer, the teacup, the spoon, everything. And I said, if you were to have touched that kettle, the water was hot. I know I saw what I saw. And
well, I'm sure you did, Sandra. I'm going to have to leave it there. My guesstimation would be that this man knew you. And just what he did was he froze you to the spot, knowing otherwise what would become of him. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes. Art?
Yes.
Yes, okay. I didn't hear the first part. Anyway, I have a good story. This happened just a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
I live in this small apartment, one-bedroom apartment with my wife. And see, I'm a truck driver. I drive overnight. Usually, and then I'm home the next day. And this would happen to be a Saturday, and I was staying up. My wife went to bed because she had to be at work the next day. And it's about 2:00 in the morning. I'm sitting at the computer, and where I'm sitting, I can see the bedroom door. It's closed. My wife likes to sleep with the door closed. Well, as I'm browsing the internet and looking at Coast to Coast Online, I out of the corner of my eye, this apparition appears right in front of my door, and I feel this chill run down my spine. The hair on my hand stands up, and when I go to look, it just quickly disappears. I feel this strong intention from this, you know, like somebody's really peering at you, not just having a glance at you.
Sure.
You feel that energy. And I thought, wow, okay. So it happened. So I go on browsing, go to bed, wake up the next morning, and my wife is a little agitated. I ask her what's wrong. She goes, last night around 2 o'clock, same time I witnessed this, there was a being in my room. It was shaking my bed. It was scaring me. And she goes, we're sensitive, and I know that we've, you know, sensed beings before, but this one is the only one that has scared me before, you know. And she was frozen. She was frozen to her bed, and she tried to scream out, but she couldn't scream. But she mentally screamed out to me, and she was just, you know, frightened. And I thought this was amazing because I saw that entity the night before, and here she is telling me what experience she had with that same entity, I assume, the next day.
Well, husbands and wives can frequently communicate with each other that way, not just husbands and wives, brothers, sisters, relatives, people who know each other and are very close are able to communicate that way.
Right. But it's pretty amazing, eh?
It is amazing. Of course it is. A lot of what we've heard tonight, what we've talked about tonight, is amazing. East of the Rockies, very quickly, you're on the air. Jim in Lakewood.
Yes, hi. What happened was I rented a place. It was an older house, a downstairs house, and I remember when I closed the door when I was leaving, I could feel that, like, when you have a magnet, you get, like, that reverse polarity. It felt like something jerked the door that said, you know, like, I couldn't close the door when I was leaving, when I closed the deal with the landlady. Well, right. It was like a warning. And later on, what happened was I had, like, an infection and a blood infection. And I was in the downstairs, and the guy that rented upstairs with this lady that she was like 98 pounds and he was like 250. He beat her to death, and I listened to her die.
Oh, my God.
And I saw her apparition in my bedroom, and she said, you know, don't come up to help me. And I thought, don't come up to help me. I thought I was like delirious because of the blood infection. Later
yes.
on, the cops came the next day after he had killed her by kicking her so bad he fractured her liver, dragged her across the floor. I witnessed all of that by listening to it. Well, they said that he had upside-down crosses and this and that. But you know what I got out of that? She gave me strength. Because you know what? Right now, I am armed to say that if it ever comes again, evil ever comes again, I'm ready for it.
Gotcha. All right. Well, I guess the best offense or defense, that is to say, is a good offense. All right, everybody, that's it. We're out of time. Ghost to Ghost AM 2006. I'm Art Bell. It has been my pleasure to be your host. You all have a good night. See you next year with another version.